You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Miriam Hansen Morrell, born October 13th in Salt Lake City at Holy Cross Hospital.
Dean Elwood Morrell was born June 7th in Slaney, Utah in 1951.
Miriam and Dean Morrell have shared an amazing life. Together, they raised six fantastic kids. Their dream is to have no empty chairs when they get to the other side. Having an eternal family is what is most important to them. They had fairly different childhoods, but both learned the value of hard work early on. Together, they've lived all over the country, had some really hard times, and witnessed miracles along their way. We'll start their story with Miriam's childhood and her family.
My parents are Theon and Wilma Hansen. My dad worked for Medical Dairy, first as a milkman and then in the credit department. And that my mom was a very, very good cook. And so to help out with finances, she started up a catering business. And so I grew up in that, and she was in demand. We had all that we could handle. And that I have four older sisters. And I was an oops in that, but they didn't send me back. So we moved into Holiday when I was about 3 years old. It was a really nice home. But the biggest thing that I remember about my childhood is really just the working. Everything that mom did, whether it was a dinner party or a wedding reception, everything was homemade. We were just on the go. And summers were just horrendous. I wasn't involved in sports or anything like that. When school's over and I go home and that, and it was always, what does mom need done before I could do any homework or anything? It was, what did she need? My mom was very insecure, and none of us really could ever figure out why she felt that way, but she did. But she compensated for it by being very, very, very domineering. It was her way or the highway. And my dad ended up just following her in that. And so it was what made me decide that that wasn't the kind of marriage I wanted. I wanted a more equal yoke. I don't get my way very often.
All the time.
I have to say that I learned a lot of things from her, and that both good and bad. But she was really a very strong believer in, if you're going to do a job, then you do it well. Don't bother. And she was a very, very hard worker. And that, so was my dad. And I'm thankful for all those good things that they both taught me.
One fun fact about young Miriam is that she enjoyed pulling pranks. She shared with me her best ever.
I had gone over to attend my sister's children, and I decided she needed to have some excitement in her life. And so I went and found one of her bras and put it in cold water and then put it up into the freezer and shaped it all up, short sheeted her bed and put a little salt in it. But the best thing I did was I unscrewed the light bulb in her bathroom and I put honey on the toilet seat. But my mom and dad came to pick me up, and I'd gone out to the car and my dad was out there. And it was taking my mom a long time. She finally came out and she was walking really funny. But anyway, she had gone in to use the bathroom and she couldn't get up off of the toilet. And she didn't think it was funny, but I did. That was probably about the best one.
Miriam's parents raised her as an active member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
They were both members. In fact, they both served missions. And it was the North Central States mission. And they met there in that. But, you know, of course, not a lot of interaction. And so they both come home, and some of the missionaries, they found out that my dad was in the hospital. And so a group of them that had served the mission went to see him. And my mom was one of them. And so then Heart of Canada was in their mission at that time. And so then they traveled to Cardston, Alberta Temple, and were married there.
Miriam was baptized a member of the church at 8 years old. I asked her what she remembers from that day.
It was actually at the tabernacle. A whole lot of kids there. My mom had to prepare some food and that, so she didn't go with me, but one of my sisters went with me in that. I used to have braids, and I could sit on my hair. So I would get my hair braided every morning. And when my dad baptized me, my braids floated up to the top. So he had to do it again, only this time they tied them loosely together and that in back of my head so that maybe they would stay down.
I then asked Miriam when it was that she gained her own testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
I have to say that it has always been there. It has certainly gotten stronger, and I view things differently because of experiences I've had in that. But no, it was there.
With her impressive work ethic, her knowledge of the gospel, and her high school diploma in hand, Miriam was ready to head to college.
I went to Cedar City for 2 years. I had sent a missionary off and, of course, was supposed to wait for him. But I got engaged to another guy that was from down around Cedar. And then that broke off. And then my missionary came home and we dated. And he asked me to marry him. But it was the type of thing that I could tell him to jump and he did ask how high, and I knew I would walk all over him. So that didn't work out, and then this guy came along.
That guy is her husband, Dean. They've been married for 48 years. Dean was raised on a farm in Bicknell, Utah. He had a classic small-town upbringing full of fun and hard work.
I was born in Slaney, Utah, but we lived in Bicknell, Utah. And my dad was a rancher, farmer, and my mother was a housewife. We had an older sister and two older brothers, and then I had a brother 4 years younger than I was. So we all worked on the farm. We had 4 or 5 milk cows, so we'd have milk. We'd have to go out. I was a younger kid, I was probably like Dennis the Menace. I was always into trouble all the time. And there's times where my younger brother and I would try to throw chickens in the ditch. We used to have a big canal by us. And we would chase my mom's cats around the house with a vacuum cleaner. She liked Siamese kittens. And so mom and dad had taken off somewhere. And we thought that would be fun to chase a cat around with it, just try to suck the tail up of a cat. And that didn't turn out very well at all because the cat hit some sheer curtains in there in her bedroom. And big old marks in it. And so my brother and I got the best end of a willow. It was work. I enjoyed it, but that's all I knew. I enjoyed with my dad, going with him all the time and on the farm. And I was probably intrigued about the farm because I liked to figure out how things worked. And we started farming with one tractor, and we grew the two tractors. You know, you're always learning how to drive early. I think I was driving a tractor when I was probably 8 years old or something like that, and helped my dad bale hay. And I remember him going down and baling hay early in the morning. And so he would walk ahead of me and turn the tractor when it came to the end of the windrow. And I just headed down, straight down the windrow. And so we got started. I mean, it was cold early in the morning and that, but I think that's why I like the farming. My mother was a good cook, and with my older brothers and my sister and my younger brother, I turned out to be the tallest. They always accused me that I got to the table before they did, but my oldest brother was, he wanted to be a basketball player, and he played basketball and quite a bit. He was always shooting baskets. You know, we had a whole basket at the side of our carport we had, and so I played basketball during high school and baseball during high school, but then still had to do the chores at home. And probably a couple occasions in that I remember as kids, we used to go swimming in a river south of town. And there was just a regular bunch of cows down in the river and everything else. We'd go swimming down there. One day we went swimming with two or three boys, and it was my age, and we went fishing too. And I got a big old treble hook in my big toe. And it was in there pretty deep. We couldn't get it out. So we had to walk back up out of there. One of the kids' dads had a farm down there. And so he looked at it and he got out his knife and gave me a rope to chew on. He says, bite on this rope. And so he proceeded to cut the hook out of my big toe. When I got older in high school, then we got teamed up with three or four guys and we'd go out at nights. And sometimes we'd go kicking rabbits with headlights and few things and dragon mane, and it was a small town. We had fun. Sometimes we'd get in trouble. My mother would always cut my hair until we got ready to go to a junior prom, and she sent me to the barber in the next town and come back out of the barber. And she says, I could have done a better job than that. So that was my mother. She was good. She wanted to take care of all of us. And my dad was just a hardworking rancher. I remember one vacation we went on, went down and saw him working on the Glen Canyon Dam. We come back home and that was it. I didn't know what I was going to do when I graduated high school. And the VOAG teacher come to my house in June, and he had a pamphlet about this course at Utah State University. And so I went to Utah State University in an ag mech course, and I went up there with nowhere to stay, followed a guy up there. I'd never been that far up north, and I lived with three seniors in a house off campus with them. I had a good time when I graduated with an associate degree from Utah State in an ag mechanism and started work at a Ford Tractor Place in Salt Lake City.
Like Miriam, Dean was raised as a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But by the time they met, Dean was not consistently practicing his faith.
Raised in the church, and my mom was very active. My dad was active, but the farm work came first. But the kids were supposed to go to church if he had to stay home. And so he was raised in the church, and I very little remember my baptism. I know that my dad was gone and down to the desert gathering cows. But he come back home when I was confirmed. I mean, it was, the church was part of the life. I mean, in a small town and everything. And it's just a matter of growing up in that way. But I think probably I always had a testimony of the church, whether it was with my mother or my dad. Because after, when I graduated high school and that, I'd come home and still go to church from college and that. But I kind of been a little bit less active and through my work. And I worked in Salt Lake, and then I took a job in California. And so I was less active. And I really didn't get reactivated back until I met my wife, sweetheart. She was a great influence on me.
Finally, Dean and Miriam's paths crossed at the bank where Miriam worked.
I moved back from California to start a new position for this company, Heston Corporation in Salt Lake. She had moved from Cedar City back home, and she was working and going to school. So I was staying with my brother because I'd be traveling all the time. The job was to travel Utah, Idaho, Nevada, and part of Wyoming. And so I just stayed with my brother in his basement. And so I had my first paycheck here. And so I had to open up a bank account.
It was a Friday afternoon. It happened to be his birthday. I was gathering up my purse on that because I was going to go on break. And I saw him come through the glass doors. You know, he had these big, long, almost lamb chop sideburns, cowboy hat, cowboy boots. And he had those mirror goggle sunglasses. He caught your attention. And I watched him for a minute, and he looked over, and he headed to my desk. I mean, I could have turned him over to one of the other girls there if I thought, oh, I'll go ahead and wait on him. So I opened up his account, and I got all pertinent information. He gave me his brother's address. I had his phone number. I had how much money he made.
She didn't marry me for the money.
So that's how we met. And that was like first part of June. And we made, I don't know how many dates, all through the summer. And one or the other of us would always break it. I broke quite a few. I would just leave notes on the front door. And I would watch him walk up to get the note and leave. And then I would just say, oh, sorry, something come up. I can't make it. But he just wouldn't give up on it. So then he called me one Saturday morning and he said, hey, I got tickets to a Charlie Rich, Olivia Newton-John concert up at the university. And that, would you like to go with me? And I thought, oh, criminy. Yeah, I do. I like Olivia Newton-John a lot. So I said, yeah, I'll go. But I thought, I'm going to make his life so miserable that will be it, that he will leave me alone. I was just saying, hey, well, I have to be home. And I don't care what your friends are doing, but you need to take me home. But yet, there was a
comfortable feeling with us. The meeting and everything else is perfect. I mean, I walked in the bank and I was right direct for her. Really good. And we did break a lot of dates. I mean, because I was traveling. And it was way before cell phones. I'd be stuck in Idaho or Nevada or somewhere. But we had talked sometimes during the week. I was lucky that she went out with me. And so we went to the concert. And we was having a good time at the concert. We looked over and looked at one another. I'd say that she wanted to kiss me. So. Even though she's going to make everything miserable, but...
Yeah, you're going to let our grandkids hear that.
Yeah, we are. So, but I mean, it was good. And I respected her feelings. And so when she wanted to go home, I took her home.
He was a gentleman.
But it was still a little rocky after that. There was still a couple of broken dates here and there.
That was like, September, early September.
Yeah.
And
so from June to September, say. So I was persistent.
And so then... my birthday being in October, I invited him over for my family birthday dinner for me. And that's when he met
then,
the whole family.
I think she had a lot of the qualities. And I would dare to say that when I walked in that bank that day, that when I saw her and sat down and talked a little bit to her, that I could tell that she had a lot of qualities that reminded me of my mother. No, just talking to her, and that's why I pursued her pretty heavily. And she did. She had got me going back to church and was actually ordained an elder after I met her, and was really good. I mean, she's a good example. And this example was, it says, hey, this is what I want in my life, and it's what I wanted. I just needed that extra little push.
It would say something like, well, what are you doing? That would be tomorrow, meaning Sunday. And I said, well, I've got church at this time and this time and that. And I invited him to come and go, and he went and that. And so then I wasn't going to push him. I wasn't going to force him. He'd say, well, is it okay if I come and go to church with you tomorrow? And then I'd say, yeah. And then, but the one thing he liked too, though, was that then that meant he was coming to Sunday dinner. And he did like my mother's cookies.
She was a good cook.
And my mother loved that. And we honestly, we could not have a date for us to go out and eat. That was no. We were going to eat with them and then we could go do what we want. But she would say, oh, he has to eat that restaurant food all week long. He can have a home-cooked meal. So she catered to him and he ate it up. We actually knew each other like a year and a half before we got married, but we didn't actually start dating until September, and then we got married a year later in November, Stalling Temple.
She said that I did not ask her to marry me, and that's the true facts. We went shopping at the mall. We talked about marriage quite a bit, and then so we walked into a jewelry store. I says, well, let's just look at rings. So she's trying on rings and everything like that. I says, well, which one do you like? She says, well, I kind of like this one. And I says, okay, let's buy it. And so then she put it on. And I think that evening or the next day, I can't remember.
It was that evening we were celebrating my mom's birthday.
Yep, or her sister's place.
You asked for everybody's attention. And then you took the ring out and you put it on my finger and you said, no, nobody needs to say that it's about time. So that was as much of a proposal as I got.
They thought I was hanging around the family just for the food, so enough for her.
I asked the happy couple to tell me what they remember from their wedding day.
It was a great time, great things afterwards, and it was a big day. I think married people can really... You go back and look at all the aspects of that day, and I think you get overwhelmed. And we'd actually went to the temple ahead of time, and so we were only just sealed in the temple. But it was still a big day, and we were able to get some time by ourselves and go and get flowers and do things ready for the reception at her parents' house.
Do you remember the brother that officiated it? We're sealed, and so then he asked if we had wedding rings. Now we said yes and that. And so I put Dean's on his hand and then he went to put mine on and he was shaking so bad I had to, just kidding. And then, but anyway, the officiator said, well, do you like that ring? And I said, yes, I do. And he says, well, aren't you gonna show him any appreciation? And I thought, okay. So I, on my tippy toes, I kissed him in that. And he said, you don't like it any more than that? And I go, okay. So I kissed him again a little bit longer. He says, well, I really think it's a little bit better than that. I mean, it was like three times. I didn't know that kind of stuff happened. But he did with us. So reception was at my parents' home. And then we left and we went to Lake Tahoe for our honeymoon.
Before leaving on their honeymoon, Miriam's mom gave them some important advice regarding a certain casino game they just had to try.
She knew exactly.
She had this machine down pat. She loved the one-armed bandits.
And she said, you need to play this machine. And we were newly married and I didn't make a whole bunch of money. And so we went over there, and it was a quarter machine. And so we start dropping money in that, and it started paying off.
We about paid for it.
Paid our honeymoon.
For our honeymoon.
Yep. And
off this machine.
So it was a good omen for us. We had a good time. And then we come back to Salt Lake.
We were both working, and that we were in an apartment.
Then I had to go traveling. I had to go to a meeting in Texas. And so I left her there with a pickup truck.
I had to go back to work.
She had to go back to work. And that pickup truck was fairly new, but it was iffy on how you started it up or you'd flood it. So it stalled on her a couple of times. And there's a gas station right up the road. And I was knowing them pretty good. Got to know them real good. So they'd helped her out a couple of times. But
at this time, I was working at a doctor's office on 39th South, just up from 7th East. I was in the turn lane, and that was it. It wouldn't go. And it was raining and snowing. So I had to get to work. So I got out and walked to work, called this station thing. They come and got the truck. But I went walking into work drenched, and I was at the doctor's office. And they said, whoa, honeymoon must have been pretty hard. But I thought, if this is what married life is going to be, forget it. I'm done.
I'd come home on Friday afternoons and leave sometimes Monday mornings.
Our first child came along really fast, and our second one came 14 months after that, and our third one came 11 and a half months after that. So we needed a bigger place. So we found a little home up off of 94th
South and 23rd East.
And back then it was when you could assume a mortgage. That's what we did. Then we were able to keep their interest rate and their house payment. Then we built a home out in South Jordan, and we could watch them building the Jordan River Temple. And it was close to being completed when offered a position in Kansas. Felt very, very strongly that that's what we were to do.
I went to Kansas several times in the middle of the winter, and I hated it. It was flat. And so I said, hey, I'd like to take my wife there and just to see before I accepted. And so they said, okay. So we flew to Kansas. That was in December. Flew to Wichita and drove to Newton, Kansas, stayed in this motel. We got in late at night, and in the middle of the night it snowed. We woke up the next morning, and there was snow had drifted underneath the crack in the door.
I mean, this was a class place.
And anyway, so we went down and to work and messed around there a little bit. And we still had a hard time to whether we was going to accept the job or not. Because it was a big move for us. We had three little kids and leaving everything and moving to a place that we didn't know. And so we fasted and prayed about it quite a bit. And finally, we decided we'd take the job. In January, I started commuting back and forth from Utah to Kansas and coming back on weekends. But we didn't really move out to Kansas until
July.
But I was also traveling other places besides Kansas. And most of that was on an airplane all the time. And so when we decided to ready to move, you know, we put our house on the market to move. And at that time, the housing interest rates were like 12%. So we found a house in Kansas that we liked. Our house didn't sell. The company bought it. And so that was just a little bit of a lesser price than what we were asking. We loaded three little kids into a Toyota Celica. We left our house in South Jordan and went down to Bicknell and stayed a day or two at my parents' house and drove to Kansas. And it was then about knocking off about 100 degrees in Newton, Kansas. It was cooling down to about 90 degrees at night. And the kids would take their big wheels outside to ride down with him. We lived into a cul-de-sac. I mean, it was a nice house. And our kids wouldn't even go outside because it's so hot. They'd start down that cul-de-sac with their big wheels, and they'd run her back home and back in the house. It's too hot. It's too hot to go outside. In fact, our oldest daughter, Jody, she wouldn't even go outside go shopping with her mom until the car was started up and the air conditioner was on. And
that sounds like Jody.
So we managed that. We didn't think there was any kids in the neighborhood where we lived. And finally, it started cooling off. And our subdivision had a party. And we found out our neighbor across the street had a swimming pool. And they invited us to come over and stir the water up all the time. So we had a good time.
We liked to go on bicycle rides.
Yep.
And on the cobbled streets.
In Kansas, the Morrells became part of a congregation that had just become a ward from being a branch. Their family spent a lot of time and effort serving in the church, and they definitely saw the blessings from it.
I mean, it was like a primary room and some classrooms in the building we met into. And there was members of the church coming from 40 miles away. And then I served in the bishopric in Kansas, and then also as bishop in Kansas when I was there. So I would drag my oldest son home teaching at that time. And it was roughly a 100-mile round trip, going home teaching, visiting all very inactive people. Not less active, but inactive people. And we got to meet a lot of really great people and people that come over to our house all the time. And we would go to their house. And our children grew up with a lot of really good people. I mean, friends. It was a good time. Being in the church there, and I think as far as us growing together, I think it allowed our marriage to grow even stronger when we moved to Kansas, because it was just us. And I think that's what a lot of times when you move away from family and a few things, that it's just your husband and wife and your children.
And the Lord.
And the Lord. And there was some times there that we were living from paycheck to paycheck in Kansas.
We had taken a cut in pay when we got to Kansas.
We remember having a garage sale, have enough money for Thanksgiving dinner. It was dire. The ag industry in 1980 was pretty tight. And there was a Hostess donut place, kind of where they warehoused them. And I remember going in there to buy some stuff, coming home from work. And the guy says, tell you what, I'll sell you this whole rack for like $6 or something. I called Miriam and I says, can we afford this? And so here's all these ding dogs and donuts and everything like that. Well, we took them and put them in the freezer. And so that went in the kids' lunches for about 3 months. So besides her sandwich. So, I mean, it was tough. And it was one time that we paid our tithing or the house payment. Sunday, I guess it was. And he says, well, what do we do? I says, let's pay our tithing. He says, but if money comes, pay the house payment, pay her tithing. And Miriam called me and she says, you don't know what I got in the mail. It was a check. It's enough to pay her house payment.
My sister belonged to a sorority. And at Christmas time, they sell popcorn and nuts. And they had done very, very well. And they had this excess money. And I knew a couple of her sorority sisters. They decided to send us and this other family this extra money, thinking that we could use it because of Jana here. And so I went and deposited the check and went and paid the house payment.
After so many unexpectedly wonderful experiences in Kansas, it was time for the Morrells to move. This time to just outside Chicago, Illinois.
That time we moved 4 kids to Chicago.
Suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah. And
7 really, really
hard years.
Long years. The one thing, the kids did get very good education. I didn't have to say that.
But we
met some really good people in our ward.
When we moved to Chicago, you know, the interest rates had gone down, but the housing market was just fast. We'd go look at a house and decide we'd go back and look at it again, but it had already been sold. And so we ended up going into a subdivision that built energy efficient homes and bought one there. We had 2 more children then in Chicago. We had some neighbors in Chicago. But they're pretty tough neighbors. The kids would kick a ball over into their place, and they'd get after us a little bit. So after church, we were out eating dinner, barbecued and everything, eating dinner and after church. And our neighbors were putting the air conditioner in their window.
Upstairs.
Air conditioners upstairs. And we were just having a good time sitting there eating on the deck. And, you know, I shouldn't say this, but anyway, their air conditioner fell out of the window and went down to the ground. And we all had to go in the house immediately because we couldn't stop laughing at this tragedy. That
They were just honoring.
Yeah, but we had some good times in there.
As they raised their 6 kids, Dean was off working and Miriam was full-time mom. They shared a bit about what life was like during this era of their lives.
When we moved to Kansas, I wasn't traveling as much, so.
You still traveled, but not as much. And
yeah.
Illinois, it really calmed down. Saturdays were always basketball games, church basketball games and that. Our third child, second daughter, she was a very good basketball player. And she played for the school in that. And so Dean, maybe the 2 older kids, and they'd go, and I would just stay home with the little kids. It was just easier that way. There was a week Jason was on his mission, and Jody and Jill and Jana had gone to girls' camp. So that just left us with the 2 little kids. And Dean would come home, and then we'd eat, and then we'd go for a walk, or we'd go get an ice cream cone, or we'd put the kids to bed, and then we'd go, man, did we ever complain about when we just had 2 kids? I mean, that's nothing. Our vacations were basically to come back to Utah, and we would spend time with my folks and then down on the farm. And that our oldest son from like about 10 on would leave when school was over and go to Dean's parents' place on the farm. He loved it. And he learned to drive really early, and he thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed doing that. He loved his grandparents, that's for sure.
Eventually, the Morrells left Chicago and headed to Pennsylvania.
Changed companies.
He got sucked up by the New Holland.
New Holland Company?
Jason had gone on his mission. We had 5. He came home for a month and that, but then he came back out here to school. And that Jody, she graduated. She was back and forth in that a lot. Our next daughter ended up getting married. Jana went to a special school after she was there for, 9 months or so. Justin
graduated from Annapan Township, yeah.
And then our youngest went with us to Georgia. I really love the East Coast. I didn't ever think my wildest imagination that I would live on the East Coast, but we were 22 years on the East Coast.
The family's next move was to Georgia, where they had some profound experiences serving together in the temple.
Moved back to the other company.
To the company that he started with. I liked Georgia. I did. I
worked for the company in Georgia. And through this time, I was still doing some traveling. And then while we were in Georgia, that we actually started working in the temple, too. Miriam was working in the temple as a service worker while I was in Georgia because we had a child at home. So when Jenny left to go to school.
Temple was went shut down. They renovated for about 2 years. Yeah. And so then when they was ready to open up again, then they called us.
To be temple ordinances. And I was still traveling. And so I said, well, let's try Friday evenings. And so I would go traveling and we'd meet sometimes and change cars. And we'd go to the temple and work the temple. And when if I was working in the office, we'd leave at 3 o'clock, 3:30 at the office. And Jana was home with us, and she actually started working down to the temple too in the office. So we'd all go down there and work and come back Friday evening. It's a good time. Best thing we did, I tell you what, work in the temple. And we saw our family grow even more while we worked there. And we've always had the opportunity to say, they gave you a calling, you accept it, and you learn and grow from it. I served as counselor, bishop's counselor 3 times. And Bishop Mary and I served as young men and young women's presence together. We had a lot of fun. We'd have presidency meetings in the van during church.
Finally, Miriam, Dean, and Jana were able to return to Utah, and they've been there ever since.
What I was doing with the company, I could do anywhere, live anywhere. And so I finally went on a trip with a bunch of executives on a jet, company jet. And so I was greasing the wheel on that jet. A couple of them says, well, why don't you move? So my boss, he didn't live in Atlanta anyway. He was telling everybody at work that I was going to move and everything. He didn't tell me. So finally I went and confronted him. I said, you're telling everybody that I'm moving. I said, but you haven't told me it's okay. And so he says, yeah, okay, you can go. So by that time, we'd owned this house for 6 years. And so we come here and helped him remodel it. What we wanted to do, and we built a place for Janet to have her own suite. So I worked here for 2.5 years.
Three or four years.
And then COVID, I was already working from home anyway. So then the company come to me and said, hey, it says, why don't you retire? We'll give you severance for a year and your insurance. So I said, okay. So retired here, doing good.
As you've heard, Miriam and Dean are wonderful parents to 6 great kids, Jason, Jody, Jill, Jana, Justin, and Jennifer. They shared a small sentiment about each of their kids and what they love and admire most about them.
Jason, our oldest, really took on the role of being very protective. And he has always really worried about his siblings and that, especially his 2 sisters when it was just the three of them. I mean, he's just a good guy. And that Jody, we always thought Jody should be a lawyer. I mean, she knows what she wants and she goes after it. And that she waited a little bit to find Jared, and they went through some really rough times and that, but they've done extremely well now, and she has 3 really good boys. Jill, our next child, is the one that has stayed on the East Coast and always will. She comes out here to school, meets a guy on the very first weekend, and lo and behold, he's from Virginia. They ended up getting married. She's 19 and that, but they've done very well. She lives in Charlottesville, Virginia, and her husband has taken over a family landscaping business and has done wonders with it. He's 3rd generation. He has expanded, and they've done very well. Done very well. Then we have Jana, who's here with us. They painted a pretty bleak picture when she was born. And they told us she was blind and she was deaf and she wouldn't be able to really do anything and that, but that was all wrong. And they said she wouldn't live past a teenager. And she will be 42 in the first part of June.
She keeps us all, especially me, on...
On course.
Huh? On course. She's always...
On its her course. And then our son, Justin, is living in Wichita, Kansas. His place of work, if he goes into the office, is right by where Dean used to work. He has 2 children, a boy and a girl. He right now is kind of Mr. Mom. His wife has gone back to teaching.
He does a really good job.
Justin is very loving and caring, has the patience of a saint, and he always wants to help. When he was just a little guy, Jana was it was hard for her to go up the stairs, and that's where all the bedrooms were. But we had a sofa couch, and so that would be her bed, and she has to cath herself. And so she would do that, and then I would get up and get dressed, come downstairs. But little Justin had already gone and dumped it out. And that was just like a little three-year-old boy. And that he's always been that way. He was always very, very protective of Jenny. He looked out for her. Like the primary kids would go up to sing on Father's Day, Mother's Day, whatever, and that Justin would always take Jenny by the hand and walk her up, and the same to come back. He just has that very loving, caring attitude. And then our youngest, Jennifer, lives up in Nampa, Idaho, and she's expecting her fourth child. Her husband works for a construction company. Jennifer has been a very easygoing kind of child. She was always funny. She could hear the garage door would open up on a Saturday morning, and all of a sudden you'd hear this, "Don't leave without me," you know, because whether we were going to grocery store or wherever, she was going to come and go and that. But she also figured out that by doing so, then she would usually get some sort of
whatever she wanted.
But she would just kind of, "Wow, that looks really good," type of thing.
We used to have nicknames for the kids. I can't remember them now, but it was funny. It was like, "Gimme, gimme, gimme," or whatever. I think I remember Jody was, "Let's go shopping. Let's go to the mall." Let's say there wasn't a dull moment around the house. Jen in Chicago, we would make up games that she could play with us. In fact, the writer for the church had come out and did an article on our kids on the new era. And Jana was kept the spirit in her house.
It's like we said, we always say we've been the parent, but she's been the teacher.
For the whole family.
The whole family.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just that the kids are, I think, growing up having a handicapped sibling has probably changed a lot of them.
But when I asked Miriam and Dean what the best thing about being parents is, they said,
"Bypass that, just be grandparents."
Yeah, you have these kids now, but the best part is being the grandparents.
I think as a dad, you always want to know if you're doing things right. You want to have your children grow up to be better than what you were. And if you installed enough of your hard work. Our parents, both of our parents were hardworking, and we wanted to try to install that in our children, to be hardworking and to not shy away from hard things. And I think that's the goal, to be able to teach them about the gospel and to be more Christ-centered than what you were. And I think as a parent, I look back all the time, and we've discussed this all the time. How do we look out having such good kids?
My patriarchal blessing tells me that my children will be my crowning glory. One of the best days in our lives was the day that our youngest got married. They walked into that sitting room, and all of our children and their spouses. And you look over and you see all your children there.
On the wall behind where Miriam and Dean sat was a beautiful display of miniature wooden chairs, enough for each person in their family.
Jody started that, and it's from a talk from Ezra Taft Benson, where he says that it is the dream of him and his wife that there will be no empty chairs on the other side. That is our dream, that between our children, their spouses, and our grandchildren, there will be no empty chairs. I'd have to say, I absolutely cannot imagine where I would be if it wasn't for the gospel. wasn't for a testimony that I do have. My children, just my family, all together, they mean everything to me. And I just can't even imagine if the gospel was not the center part. And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, church is true. The law of tithing is a very real thing. And that's how we're going to get back, is that to think celestial.
Well, I mean, I'd have to start back a long time ago. Thank my sweet wife for being there when I was ready to be activated back. And it seems like as you get older, your testimony changes and grows. We look back over our life and how much the Lord has had a hand in all of our decisions, and all of our moves until you cross that threshold and you look back on your life and your decisions that you've made, that you know that the Lord helped you make those decisions. He carried you. And we know that today through our lovely children. And it's not just Dean and Miriam, it's the Lord and how we raised our children. I think we probably would have screwed up if it hadn't been for...
Screwed up more than we did.
Without having our Father in Heaven next to us. I wanted to be able to know that the church is true and her testimony, our Father in Heaven, be here with us in the temple ordinances and the promises that we commit to and we continue to live with those ordinances, and for having the opportunity to be able to partake of the sacrament every Sunday to help refine us and to be able to live with our prayer in our heart every minute of the day. You don't really realize it until you start thinking about it, how that makes you change your actions, your thoughts, and the ability to be able to communicate with our Father in Heaven through prayer. As they rededicated the Manti Temple Sunday, I know of a witness for sure. The temples are here to help guide and direct us at all times, and that would be my testimony.
As you've heard, Miriam and Dean have lived a life full of faith and focused on their family. They have been dedicated to their covenants with each other and with God. They've taught their kids to be hardworking, good people, and they've focused on their goal to have no empty chairs. A huge thank you to Jody Borg for making this episode possible and to the Morels for being interviewed. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.